Blog Talk Radio.
Right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Got all the co-hosts in the house tonight. All of them, or today. We got Reverend T up in the house. We got John in the house. We got Joe in the house. We got Chief Devlin. What we want to do today, we want to do let's just woosah. Let's get it all out. You know, because now and then we got to exhale. You know, the movie Waiting to Exhale. We got to get it out. And we got to talk about everything that's going on and then how we feel. Now, this show is, number one, I want everybody to understand, no matter where you may be listening from, good morning to the Facebook people of Billy Brown, Sonia, Marla, Antonio Tillman up in the house, Reverend T up on the comments. You know, this show started in Waco, Texas. So it is founded by Waco, Texas people who supported me and believed in me. And we started this show 4 years ago. We started talking about police reform when it wasn't popular to talk about, when nobody wanted to hear it. When, I'll just say, several people that I work with wouldn't speak to me anymore because I dared talk about these issues. Not the department or the city, but these issues. And so recently somebody told me, they said, you know, I got a call and somebody said, you know, you got a fan here. And I always like to acknowledge fans, haters or not. They're fans, obviously, because they're listening, who listens to every video you do and every show. And they seem to believe that all we do on this show is complain. Never mind the fact that we offer solutions without sponsors for 2 hours every Saturday. So I want to send this one out to Officer Barry. This is from me to you. Yes, I know who you are. I don't hate you, brother. No problem. You and your 4 years, 5 years experience, you can call here 646-716-4621. Press 1. I'll put you on because I want to bring you from the water cooler or the locker room. Since you have insight, I want to bring you to the forefront. So this is for you.
In
community better. We're not just opening dialogue that's going to help you out there on your job. We're helping the country. We're listening to the voice of the elite, the overlooked, the marginalized. That's what this show does. None of us here are paid. We have a chief of police that comes on this show every week. Every week. And I can't tout that enough. But when folks run a complaining, caution, you're going to hear colorful metaphors, agitated as it is, better known as curse words on this show. I use them. I put a dollar in the curse jar. So you're going to hear them because this is not the discussion that you normally have. We're not going to dress the discussion up to make it palatable for black people or rich people or Republicans or Democrats. You're going to get it. Like Joe, 32-year homicide detective and still working. The chief, Tony, John, you're going to get it straight off the bone. Now, if you can't handle this here, see, we have a child seat over in the corner. Go sit there. Because on here, we bring it real. And if you want to join, it's not incumbent. You don't have to agree with any of us on this show. We're not going to beat you up. 646-716-4621, when you can hear the show, press 1 so that I know you want to talk. We will put you on. And we're not going to listen to you to find where we can cut you down. We want you to vent. Because I think that a lot of America today is waiting to exhale. They're tired of being told what to do. People today, I think they just want somebody to listen. And then at the end of listening, taking in all their problems, and everything that people are living through in this country, they want to look at that authority figure, that hero, and hear him say, I don't know. Find the answer together. That's what this show is about. With that, let me get around to the co-host and get everybody in here so we can get rolling. Big John, what's up, bro?
Good morning, everyone. I'm ready for another explosive show, and I'm glad it's kind of like off the cuff so we could pretty much talk about some of these things that you're talking about now, envy and jealousy and root of it and where it comes from. There's the reason why there's the problems that we have today is because of envy and jealousy, but I just wanted to say that this past Thursday, I felt so great, man, because while I was incarcerated, my mom and aunt, they started a food pantry through the church, and it's a pretty large food pantry. I went and volunteered Thursday, and just the joy you see on people's faces, man, and there was so much extra food, and then, you know, I'm sneaking people food and stuff like that. You know, it's just amazing, man. Like, you know, but I also seen the ugly side too. That it was people who were trying to double up and, you know, stuff like that. And there's other people that need things out here. It's other families, and people are not mindful of other families, but. Man, what an experience, man, and a great feeling to be able to take care of family that may not have, just maybe be less fortunate than you are. A beautiful thing, and if we could all, you know, be more mindful that there's someone else that's not eating, and, you know, we coming in with a new Ram jersey, that money could have went, excuse me, I didn't mean to say that.
Oh, wow, he came for me already.
You get the picture. But it was a great experience, what you said.
But John, I got to add this to your intro. Brother, I'm always going to lift you up. Always. Because we got first-time listeners and first-time trolls. And people are hearing what you're saying. And we can paint it with this brush that says, you know, well, that's good talk coming from him. Oh, yeah, amen. Take a minute. And I'm going to do this. If I got to do it every damn show, I'll do it. Because I know John Ruffin. Everybody on here knows John. And where John came from to where John is the quintessential point of why we do this show. And take a minute. They heard all these kind words. Tell them who they're coming from.
Okay. I did 24 and a half years behind bars, consecutive time. I'm not talking in and out. I'm talking about 24 and a half years. prior to that, I was head of a drug operation with my brothers. I also was head of a gang. So I had those two entities going on when I first went inside the prison system. I was still gangbanging. I was still bringing drugs in to correctional officers that wasn't clean officers. But but it came to a point in my life where I had to wake up. And it was basically, man, my brother was a cop. And I told this story before. It's too long to go into now, but my brother said some things to me, man, that registered. And it began the changing of my life. And to come home and to be embraced. Because there's always going to be people that's going to look at you with a great deal of scrutiny. People don't believe that you changed. But you have to believe in yourself. And I found a family that believed in me. Joe Mosley, Stan Mason, Tyrell K. Dunmore was on the show. Then LaRonda Young, I believe her last name is. Been so long. and they embraced me. And one of the things they told me to do was go get your voting rights. And I did. I voted for the first time in my life. Even to be dealing with the process was like new things for me. And it has opened me up, man, as far as my life is concerned. And, I wasn't always a good person. I believe there was a good person existing in me. But I have to live up to an image. And when you wear a mask so long and you have became everybody's villain and neighbor of the story, you try to live up to that role that people have put you in through you wearing a mask. And sometimes you wear a mask so long that you become the mask, and that's where I found myself. And thank God, man, that I'm surrounded by beautiful people, man. And you know, you got a problem with Joe's. Well, Joe's me, school Joe. Something's wrong with you, man, because these are great men who are fighting for a great cause. And they believe in the work that they're doing here on the show. This is not something to get some type of publicity or fame, make a name for themselves. You know, a lot of sacrifice going to this show, man, and they believe in it. There's meetings behind this screen that takes places, and men have real conversations, and people have real concerns about community, and they believe in the communities that they serve. So I salute the men that are on the show, and I thank everybody who listens in every week. And who call in, everyone who participates and Behind the Blue Curtain, because you all make the show. And Joe is my captain, man. That's my guy, man. I salute him, man. I love to mess with him because he likes to start trouble with everybody else. So I'm his son. But like I said, you know, coming from where I came from, whether you sell drugs to someone directly or indirectly, you're responsible for the condition of the community. And for anybody talking about they're for their community, but yet you're selling drugs, if you give back to that community with drug money, the end don't justify the means. So find a better way to be a pillar in the community. Be an example for young men. That's what this our communities are missing. They're missing Stan Mason getting dressed up in his uniform, leaving out of the community, going to work, and Joe Mosley, so that the kids in our community have someone to look up to as a hero. Because it ain't all about sports and art and rap music and entertainment. You know, it's real life out here, and that's what these men represent. My brother Jim, white chocolate. And then right there spot, man. So just wait to see if he can dance, but we'll find that out one day.
All right, John. Appreciate you, brother. Let me drop off. We're gonna lay the rival up in the house. What's up, Izzy?
Yeah, buddy.
How's your week, man? What's going on? How are you feeling?
Not bad. I was feeling better last night than I am today. I mean, I was at home Friday, and I was out a little bit late, which is why I'm late today. But I'm okay. The world is still terrible, so I still got a job.
Good dog, I had nice tea last night.
Yeah. I'm good. What are we talking about?
Anything you want to talk about today, we opening it up for not just us, but even the listeners, if they want to call in 646-716-4621, they can vent, they can get it off their chest, they can woo-saw, and we'll comment if we know, or we'll step out if we don't, but, you know, We want to let everybody, let's just all collectively exhale today. And I'm going to go down, speaking of exhale, let me go down a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Because this is a type of show for me that is near and dear when you talk about, you know, hey, let's just keep it an open form. The truth hurts sometimes. I do want to speak the truth a lot today, like I try to always do. And I'm going to be asking questions and probing for answers to questions that people either call in about or talk to one of the co-hosts. You know, I'm not particularly, I guess, joyful. I've seen some more police videos that have really bothered me, so there is a burning question I intend to ask all of our co-hosts and the society at large. So what I'm not going to do today is, and I don't try to do it, is talk to itchy ears. You know, and the Bible I read talks about itchy ears and how the Lord warns people about having itchy ears. And it's funny because we all have it, you know, and what makes me laugh is the fact that I'm not going to, you know, belabor the point, but, you know, when you come out of the shower and your ears are wet on the inside and you feel that tingling, and nothing feels better to some people than sticking a Q-tip in there, even though it's wrong, even though Q-tips have the back on their box, do not insert into the ear canal because it may cause danger and harm to your ear. People still do it because it feels good, and that's where we are right now in this society. You know, people are listening to people because they make them sound and feel good, but they are 100% wrong. You know, I'm very happy today, but I'm also not happy, so I'll just kind of leave it at that, Sam. You know, we have a very odd place in our union today. You know, I'll just say this and stop, but it's just funny. Every president that gives the State of the Union address is just lying. I don't care who they've been. The word union means to be joined. This country has never been joined. Every politician that gets in office, by the time they take the oath, they've already been compromised by the millionaires and billionaires because people like us are told to vote, and we vote to get people in office, and we think that when they get in, they have our best interest at heart. But what we don't realize is that by the time this person takes the oath, they've already been approached by special interests who were in the back rooms, you know, strategizing.
Cheating in the back room.
What happens if she wins? What happens if he wins? If the Democrats win, how do we get to him? If the Republican wins, how do we get to her? And so they strategize, and then they say, well, get it done. And so that's why you see things change. That's why you see politicians campaign on one thing, get in office, and then they do a complete 180. You think Joe Biden is really going to forgive student loans, even though that man campaigned on it? Really? That makes me angry because the banks went to him and said, no, you're not. Now he says, I don't know if I have the power to do that. Well, why the hell did you say it in the campaign trail then?
Ooh.
You know, so I'm not really happy. You know, I'm not happy with the word union. I'm not happy with the police union. As a pastor, I know God is not going to be happy when I say this, and I'm going to shut up. but I will be right there smiling when the head of the police union are marched down into hell and tormented forever. Because if ever there is a room in hell for people, it is the head of the police unions who are doing wrong by letting psychopaths, by letting racists, by letting bigots, by letting gangbangers and murderers keep their job and fight for their job. And Officer Abel, or former Officer Abel, I'm talking about you. Officer Chauvin, I'm talking about you.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of police who have a job right now who shouldn't because of the police union. So yeah, I'm not very joyful today, but again, I'm going to be a little indelicate because it's just I want to get some things cleared up. I want people to ask me questions. If you want to know, Tony, where does the church stand on this? I'm going to tell you where the Bible stands, not where the church stands.
Amen.
Things.
Amen.
Oh, yeah.
All right, y'all heard it. We're going to go up top because we have a resident chief in the house all the time. The most fearless chief in this country because he chooses to come here, not MSNBC, Fox, CNN, ABC, CBS, rest of the alphabet, but come here where all of you are, where the least of the people are. And he comes every week. It's not unusual for me to call him. Yeah, I'm headed back home. I have my kids at the soccer game. I'm on my way home. And as soon as I get home, I'll be on. This is the chief of police that calls out time out of his schedule. And weekends don't mean anything to police officers. Weekends or holidays mean nothing to us. That's first off. They don't. It's a work day. And he makes that time every single week to be here. And he's active on the Facebook. You guys, he's reachable. And he's got the guts to stand up and say what is right. Whether black people are happy, white people are happy, Republicans, Democrats, the police, he will say what is right. So he's got the resident spot on the show. This is the chief of the show.
Well, good morning. I was hoping you were going to Joe after Tony, after that. From work this week.
Wow.
Training our recruits. Police Academy, I spent all week out there with them. So that means I wasn't just hanging out. This means I was actually teaching these kiddos how to do this stuff. It's a very, very long, productive week. Training our future leaders and officers that are going to serve our county because it's not just my agency. It's basically every agency representing the county has got somebody in this academy. So very, very good dynamic people. It's been a good week. I am tired, and I'm looking forward to actually sleeping tonight. And glad it is because the world still sucks. So, you know, I guess I got a job. I'm ready to get on. Apologize for not being here last week, but I watched the show. You guys were fantastic, as always. And I'm ready to get into some of that Tony Tillman stuff. I'm ready to get some of those answers out.
That'll work. Let's drop it down. We got to bring up the man. The man.
Where's his song?
Aquarius. Libra. Leo. Cancer. Ralph. Charles. Paul.
What's up, Joe?
Hey, man. Tell him, Joe, that's just a mole. Don't worry about that, baby. Okay.
How was your week, Joe?
According to our article I posted last week, there have been 181 killings black young men in this country, since Floyd's death. Problem number one. Problem two, let's talk about gun control. And we hear this from both sides. But here's what, as a practitioner, I think Chief and Bruce, maybe you, hopefully isn't. We're talking about common sense gun control. Where does the emphasis seem to be? And let me preface that by saying this. Legal gun control, the legal gun owner is here. If we're going to have reform in, let's say, the gun side, let's just start that with a conversation, then wouldn't it be incumbent on us to go after the criminal element as opposed to those who legally, lawfully possess them? Now, if we look at gun ownership nationwide, break down statistics, blacks have as many guns as whites. But when we look at who is the victim of a homicide, violent homicide, who makes that category up? And I would suggest you this, just since I come back to this, I don't have a lot of white offenders. That's not speaking out there. But the guys that get caught with the guns, guys like, for instance, the guy we call the ghost gun, he's out on the street. But you want to penalize a guy that's got a gun, who's followed all of the rules.
Yeah.
Joe,
can you take a minute and explain what a ghost gun is for the listeners who may not be familiar with what they are?
Well, there's an epidemic heading to the neighborhood you belong to. They call it ghost guns. Ghost guns are guns that can be manufactured without a serial number. There are no markings on it, and actually you can read the print. Supreme Court just said last week, or maybe a month ago, that the people that have those SBO files can put them on the open market. So depending on your type of 3D printer, you can actually, and I've got a couple of printers, somewhere I would print that, you can actually make the major component and buy other pieces and make yourself a gun that exists. We picked up a guy, we picked up a guy that had those, kind of had 53 rounds.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Policemen are not carrying a 50-round magazine. So anybody running up against a guy that says, I tell you, but I've heard it, I ain't going back to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So when you catch him, you do all the paperwork. You figure that the average processing of a weapon, at least in this city, maybe 1 or 2 hours. Then he's out on bond.
Wow.
So where's the problem? I mean, and it's not just, it's everywhere. And it's not, it's the problem, again, to talk about sensible gun control. And let me say this to our listeners. Don't get caught to this thing of this Second Amendment by God getting rights. You didn't have God getting rights. The Constitution wasn't written for everybody to be on this. Let's be very clear about that. The founding fathers didn't count some of us as whole people and didn't address the need for what we now call gun control. That's the idea. It's just amazing to me that, again, let me go back to something else. In this country, you are assumed to be innocent until proven guilty. I believe that's the normative value. Well, that's not always the case. Are some of these shootings bad? I would say, yeah. This last shooting of the guy that was coming out there serving a warrant on, they shot him back to the head. I don't know how to justify that. It is. It is what it is. And that's where I'm at for today. But I will say this. Some of the stuff that Tony just said, I can totally disagree with it. I will not agree that the heads of all these shootings are bad. I will not agree.
I'm
not going to agree that all, some Reverend Basie said all policy is a crook. I don't agree with that ever. And some of you know why. I'm personally involved with a couple of politicians. And I know what they tried to do. I've been in the room. I was in the room with Harold Washington and a few other people when they beat Mike Madigan with a home computer on a redistricting. So I'm not ever going to agree that all of them are bad. I will say this, do they get called out? I will not agree that they cannot do something about it. bumping his bike and said, this library book, he got on and said that he was going to wipe out the student debt. He couldn't do it, that's bullshit. He couldn't. Let's be clear on that. He couldn't. There's a lot of things that we could do. Will they do them? Are they expedient to do? That's another discussion. But when it comes to what they can do, I don't agree with them. They can't do it. That's just, I was whether it be Republican, Democrat, Independent. They could do it.
Thank you. You've got private companies that have come up with a patent for fighting off COVID-19, the vaccine. This man, our president, is allowed and will roll back the patent protection in order to help other countries. So you mean you can do that? You can roll back a patent, but you can't for national security, whatever lame brain reason he gave. You can't forgive student debt. We can bail out Wall Street. We can bail out the auto industry. But my God, Joe and John Q. Public, to hell with you. We're not going to bail you out. We're going to bail out billionaires because the country, as you know it, would just fall to hell if billionaires lost any sleep. But my God, you students who have graduated, I'm glad you idiots voted me in because I'm better than that orange idiot would have been. But I'm going to lie to you, just not like he did. I'm going to do something. I'm going to roll back the patent and help the world. But, you know,
Tony,
probably
not forgive this. Okay, let's inject this into that conversation. How about we roll the patent down a little bit closer to home and we say this. I would like to wake up and not have to look at Facebook to make sure I don't wear the wrong thing to make somebody feel uncomfortable so I'm not shot and killed or arrested or stopped. There are officers out there right now on the streets that would love to come to work and not have to worry about the patent corruption in some of these departments. And for people he don't know what he's talking about, don't take my silence for niceness. I can talk about it if I wanted to. But they have to carry all that political baggage. They got to go in the roll calls where this officer is sleeping with this officer's wife. Everybody in the room got pistols. They got to carry all of that mental baggage. They haven't even gotten to their patrol car yet. And they got to go out there and get in that car and go listen to 10 or 12 hours of problems every day. And see, I'm inserting this part, and those of you who have followed the show, not the haters, because they pick and choose what they want to listen to, but I've talked about that. Police suicide. Let's kind of flip it a little bit because everything's on the table. That is the number one killer of police officers in this country, police suicides. The unions have been relatively abstinent on it. The Republicans and the Democrats don't want to touch it. The chiefs have remained silent. The city managers, assistant city managers, and mayors keep quiet. And we're putting officers in the ground from stress they didn't have till they started this job. And it wasn't Pookie, Ray Ray, Jimbo, and whoever else that gave them that stress. It's the internal problems in the department.
Sam, you know what? I'm going to speak on this first because, hey, man, I love you. I do love the police department, you know, because if my car is getting stolen, I'm not going to call the fire department. Okay, I'm going to call 911, the police department. So I'm not anti-police, but I got to tell you something. It's just very hard. Now, I'm going to just speak for me. First book of Tony, third person. It's very hard for me to want to talk about police suicide when I keep watching videos of police behaving badly.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me as a pastor to want to, oh my God, what could we have done? No, I don't feel that way because when you're watching out of control officers, here is what I'm wondering. And I want to make sure I preface this by saying I do not condone violence. But Stan, it's hard for me, I won't even talk for tonight, it's hard for Tony to, I won't say care, but have empathy to research how I can help an officer not blow his own brains out when you are watching police go out in society. And I've told that this man has told you his wife is pregnant, and you slammed her to the ground.
No,
I'm afraid for one day Joe Public is going to have enough his gun and blew an officer in his
Hang on, Tony, because I know, wait a minute, hold on, because I know where you're going with it, and we're going to get that part in. But I'm going to say this, you know, because you and I had the conversation, and I told you, you know, bring the topic up because I think it's relevant and needs to be talked about, and we're not going to run away from the topic. But I can tell you for me, and I understand where you're coming from, but I also understand the other side. And I'm just talking about little old Waco. I'm not talking about Detroit and Chicago and Miami and L.A. where officers can die for speaking out and taking a step. Now, we've been doing this show for 4 years. I don't care about ratings. Don't mean anything to me. We should be up in the hundreds of thousands, but we're not. Why? Because people don't want to hear themselves called out in the process of working towards what is right, whether it's black people, white people, whatever. But I can tell you, Tony, you know my story. Just in that little old town where I was and what I went through, I wish more officers would speak up. I understand why a lot don't. We had the George Floyd Act. It's on the table, and everybody's clapping and applauding. Hercules, Hercules, Hercules. Where's the protection for those whistleblowers? Because America will not legislate itself to police reform. It simply will not happen until you give the officers in there the protection they need to be able to come forward, like Shannon Spaulding, who got screwed, white as snow, and got screwed by Chicago PD. That part. You know, until we give these officers the mental health treatment, we take perfectly good human beings, by and large, not all, but by and large, and we send them to catastrophes, not in some foreign land. We send them out to catastrophes right here at home, the three-year-old that's been sodomized, the family whose whole heads have been cut off, the things that we read in the paper and dismiss. They live with the rest of their lives. They carry it with them. And they deal with the internal struggles in the department, all the bullshit that police departments, administrators, no offense, chief, but chiefs, city council people, mayors, and these country club people who just want to treat you like a blue lawn jockey to stand out there and just wave at traffic for their little special event. All that crap is in your head. So I understand when these officers don't speak up. And I'm not going to say I necessarily, but I'm not going to judge them. Say Dan spoke up, you should too. But
I mean, and of course, no offense.
Come on, Chief.
Because I wouldn't be here if you know there wasn't some issue that we need to fix. But listening to Tom and then listening to you, because that's who I am between the police and the public. There are many organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from both ends. So what Tony's talking about is 100% true and legit. And what you're talking about is 100% true. So as leaders within these organizations, you're going to have to figure, we have to figure out, they have to figure out, let's do together and deal with the suicide issue. I did from Tony. You know, you're watching video after video of an officer and their misconduct. I mean, why would you even get a grant? I mean, that's just perception. So I absolutely understand that. And we've got to work very hard to change that. And I don't want to be cliche-ish, and please don't hammer me in the comments, but there are hundreds of thousands of police officers out there. Right? And Tony's not trying to say, well, he supports us. He knows he likes law enforcement. We got bad folks out there that need to get weeded out. They need to get taken care of. They're just being an evil. Right. I mean, that's just the way it is. There are people out there that are just bad. So we're talking about some of these videos, mental health training or other things which help them to become productive officers, or should they have been able the administrative punitive way, which I'm sure they should have been, and let go early on. There's always the lessening from the department of, you know, we don't want to just go in and start firing people. I mean, no organization just wants to go and start hammering people. Google doesn't bring you on to fire you, right? They bring you to be productive. And then throughout the span of your career there, if you screw things up, hopefully we can coach and counsel and correct you and get you straightened out. There's just some people that that's not going to work. Unfortunately, in local government, it doesn't happen. They don't cut ties quickly enough and send them on their way. And yet, that's why you see these issues that we're talking about. That's why you see excessive use of force. You know, and it gets drilled down further as a practitioner, a trainer. You know, that teaches these people, you know, that loss of mental control. That's the first part of an excessive use of force claim. Mm-hmm. It's when the officer, they lost mental control. You know, the idea of you screaming at me, I know the public is going to yell at me on calls for service because they don't like either what I'm telling them that we can legally do or can do, or the advice that they may be giving them. Because you're screaming at me doesn't mean I need to be louder than you. Man, that's part of some of these real small, tiny issues that Stan is talking about, getting yelled at, screamed at over the long haul in a career. And people may not even care. That's fine. But the truth hurts, and I'm telling you, that over a career, if you went to your job, and in your job, you got yelled at every day, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're not doing what I want you to do, you're not going to stay there for very long. But for some reason, we do. And we take things on some officers. Some officers are able to handle it and do it for 30-plus years. But we need to find and we need to search down, drill down, and find the people that are really the fog. And if they can't do the job, they can't do the job. I mean, let's just be honest. We've got to send them on their way. But sometimes it's a little more difficult than, you know, it's just not like turning on a switch, guys. As not even in a major one. Joe, you know, Joe has got some craziest stories I've ever heard of. As a 26-year law enforcement professional, I still am like, you've got to be kidding me. That happened within your department, like internally in the department. So, you know, I don't have the answer, but this problem is simply not flipping a switch, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Those of you that are on the panel, go look and read the George Floyd Act.
Mm-hmm.
Go look at it.
Yep.
They didn't talk to anybody on this panel.
No.
On what he's saying in there. I mean, it's baseless. I mean, I'm not sure if you can. I'll let somebody else talk about it. But I mean, I'm going to eat up time. Go ahead.
To go back to Tony's anger and hostility, which is definitely valid. I mean, no one's putting it out. It's not a problem. But, I mean, as I am writing about this all the time, I totally get the burnout effect of, because if I find it very frustrating, I think I've said it before on the panel, but like, these cops keep making my job difficult because I try to do my writing as a project of just showing what reforms are happening, how things can change, and how things need to change. I think that the major media in general isn't accepting a lot of their responsibility in the narrative that's being presented to people like you, like me, like Tony, because they're profiting off that anger. But let me be clear, the mainstream media aren't showing these videos and pushing this narrative because deep down in their soul, they just care so much about police reform and improving it. They don't. They care about ratings, they care about clicks, they care about likes. And so there's something to be said for why, because it's true, like just from a numbers game. Like, with the number of people that are in this country, with the number of police departments that are in this country, with the number of police officers that are in this country, like, this stuff is happening is bad, but from a numbers game, the numbers don't add up to what people are saying. But the media is pushing a narrative. The media is allowing people to come on the news and say abolish the police. The media is pushing a narrative of contentiousness and anger and hostility because they profit off of this issue. They don't profit off of form. They don't profit off of change. They don't profit off of police conversation. They don't make money off of that. They make money off of contention and anger and get people like Tony to the limit where they're like, screw all of this. I don't want to deal with any of this. I'm not going to try and figure out a way to have a conversation, try and figure out a way to improve things, to consider all the areas. They profit off of everybody getting angry and hostile.
Mm-hmm.
So when they,
that's from the media. Yeah, there he is right there. He's right next to me. That's from the guy who writes about it. He's the dude that showed up. This is the media. He's telling you the story.
Okay, Izzy, now let's go back to this part that you always bring up. And Dr. Facey remarked to this on the Facebook comments. how are we going about hiring these people? Because let's face it, let's be honest, we're hiring some nuts. There's people, I don't know, I sat on interview boards. And we got people coming through getting badges and guns that somebody should have done some due diligence.
Let me interject with something that I think I talked to the chief and some of you other guys about. It's a phenomenon, and I'll take the lead on this. I'll call it vindictive policing.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain
mm-hmm.
what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
He put the wrong people in the wrong positions, and those type of attitudes tend to triple down. And here's what I mean. So you've got to, let me just say a pimp who are now generational within the department. They now have control over a certain venue, let's say a narcotics operation. They bring their guys in. Who do their guys bring in? Their guys. So who are they reflecting of? Are they reflective of the community they're serving? No. Are they reflective of the command that's in place? Yes. Now, again, what's vindictive police in my mind? Again, this is terrifying. This is on no one but me. So you've got a tactical unit that's led by a race. What do you think the rest of your team is going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not you admit to it, you don't have to. Look at the stats. The fact that one team is making more arrests or more misdemeanor arrests should be a signal. But again, something, and I agree with Izzy, I agree with the chief, a lot of stuff that someone is talking about is media driven, and I'll take you out. If we look at the examples of these, if you saw the article about 181 black men killed in Florida,
mm-hmm.
it tells you about the good officer, but you don't hear about the good because it doesn't lead. If that is a fact, whether you want to admit it or not, I guarantee you, I challenge anyone to watch the news and tell me what leads off every night. In Chicago, guess who got shot this morning? Guess who got shot? Well, guess what? On the damn ride, on the expressway. They don't pronounce it that. What do you want to talk about? Police reform. Well, let me ask you this. Is everything a police issue? No. But because what I call, again, vindictive policing, everything is now a police issue because it's easier to blame us than the rest of society. For instance, there is a shooting in a certain neighborhood. Who do they send in? They send in a specialized unit. What is that specialized unit supposed to do? They're supposed to tamp down crime. You tamp down crime. You kick that ass. Whether you want to admit it or not, that's what they do. They're a size of book ass. Now, are they going to take the right ass? In most cases, not. But it's vindictive because you got the wrong people coming in kicking the wrong ass.
Well, I'll be one better. I mean, I like what you said about the vindictiveness of policing because that is, I mean, in a lot of ways, historically, that is American policing. And also, we need to take as a society a little self-assessment because we have a vindictive justice. The same people that are out there, and this is the problem that I have, and the media still does it as well. You have the same people that are outraged by George Floyd killing, by all these killings of cops, and they have a right to it. But those same people that are outraged by that will support the death penalty, will support a lot of the vindictive aspects of our justice system that happen every day, but they don't have to see it. And, I mean, when you think about, like, why is nobody going after the Supreme Court? The Supreme Court has, if they don't turn down a case that could change the justice system for the better, they just ignore it. They lock the door and close the windows and act like they're not home. Why are they allowed to do that? Why are they allowed to misappropriate justice like that? Why are they the deciding factor? Because a lot of times you think about it, like, people are like, why isn't there change and stuff like that? Go look at that Supreme Court. Because they're not looking at the case. Because they're ignoring them. Because they don't want to deal with it. Because they choose not to. And they can choose not to deal with it. So there's so many aspects of it. But we have to take self-assessment. Because people like to rag on the cops, and the society that we live in, the government that we live in, has, for lack of a better expression, fucked things up so much that they have to put it all on the cops' plate. They're dealing with all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that we're all kind of to blame we're in. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we talk about the style of the policing that we talk about and how bad they are, we didn't all just pop out of a pot in this situation. We were here for this for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
This has been happening for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about how entertainment is sold, media is sold, how the narrative around policing is sold on a popular level to the American populace, we have to take a hand in how we got to this point, because while we are against aggressive policing, while we're against over-policing, at the same time, in certain ways, in certain contexts, depending on the situation, we still are for a lot of the stuff that we say that we're against.
Mm-hmm.
It's contextual, you know? We're all against the George Floyd killing and stuff like that, but if certain circumstances and certain situations or details of that circumstance had changed, and officer had been in the right somehow for that. In certain aspects, we're all about protective justice. You know?
But no, I do agree with that. Now, what I'm going to say is, it goes along.
Let me share this one thing. Just this week, I had one of the best detectives I've ever met in my life. He had to do what's called a VSI. For those who don't know what a VSI is, victim sensitive interview. He had to take two juveniles under the age of 10, who have been sodomized, and had to listen to their story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference between her and the psychologist gets to go from room to room, so that was, and it gets some time off. The detective has to listen to those stories every day. Nowhere in my system did anyone besides me go to her and say, how are you feeling? What are you doing today? Let me talk to you. Why don't you go take some time off? Now, I can say now, I'll probably get in trouble when I go over there tonight. I gave her some time off. You know why? Because I saw the need for her to decompress. The problem is that it's not just belief, it's leadership. And we talk about it. I maintain it. It's still.
You know, Joe, what you just said, though, Carla Bethea, you know, she, my homegirl, she wrote something in the Facebook comments. She said, anger is not the only choice for people or the media. And she says, to resort to for change or ratings. The plight of humans is a story. And Dr. Facey says something that I think is quintessential. It's at the point of this, for this segment, the whole argument. People call the police for everything. I'm locked out of my house. Call the police. I can't find my keys. Call the police. The neighbor's dog is barking. Call the police. And that comes from police chiefs who would not look assistant city managers or city managers or mayors in the face and go, we're not going to that. That's bullshit, and we're too busy. And busy doesn't have to mean you're at a shooting. Busy might mean I'm sitting at a park shooting basketball with five kids. And people say, well, it looks like you're having a good time. No, you don't know where those five kids are going to be later. See, it's about making that investment. And many of these cities, you got rid of your power programs. You got rid of everything. We've taken the interdepartmental sensitivity out of the department where we're all heroes because society, you all called us heroes. You made us gods. And so when Joe did what he did for that person, Joe saw she needs that mental health day. She needs it. Nobody else around Joe saw it. Society said it's your job. Just do your job. So, you know, bro, I applaud you.
I 100%, not to cut you off, Tony, but, and I'll get you to this thing, but I agree 100% with Joe. We do this, you know, try to do the same thing and check it on the civilian. You know what, you can be on the show, and I don't think anybody is, but you can absolutely aid the police. Absolutely, which that's your God-given right to do that. But it's our job to make sure that our people are okay. And I think that's lost in the mix. What Joe is talking about, what I'm talking about, what Stan's talking about, when we start talking about mental health checks and wellness, and you know, I think the average, again, not to get anybody to feel sorry, but if non-law enforcement life expectancy, you live 25 years longer than we do on average,
mm-hmm.
and normally we die within 4 or 5 years of retirement.
And members say 3 years, Gene.
Oh, it's 3. So if you're in a high crime pollution area with major offenses taking place, that's every other call. That adrenaline spike in health, it's huge problem. People, some folks might not even give a crap. That's fine. But that's Joe's job. Make sure that
we take care of that stuff, because I'm telling you, general public, a lot of that has to do with the problems that you're seeing that are being sold to you or pushed to you by the media.
Amen.
So we as internal leaders have got to fix that stuff. And it doesn't matter. I don't care if you're working for, if you're the whoever for Chicago PD or Philadelphia or NYPD. I'm a small little department, but that is the main focus. Make sure that I have a good product, because my product is people. I don't make anything. I have service. That's what I deliver. So that's my metric. That's my measure. And if I can't have well-rounded goals mentally and physically, I'll see a dog's like it. Yeah. But if we can't have well-rounded people mentally and physically, then that's why we run into these problems. The fact that there are just some very, very bad people that somehow got through. And again, not again, don't even get to you, but that hiring process that you asked about earlier, Stan, that has to be slow, methodical, purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the metrics and the measures of what it is you want. Right? Available if anybody comes walking in the door and says, what have you done to hire your police? Like,
but Chief,
what do you have?
But Chief, here's the thing. Not be afraid. I've sat on those interview boards and I've failed people that are working right now today. And on the back of that sheet, I used to write, hang on, Joe. I used to write on the back of the score sheet why I failed them in a particular area. And I was told, don't leave notes, because if we get audited, it could be there. Now, we got, but here's the thing, we got people who should not be doing this job. And let's just be honest about it. Chief, you've been in these interview boards. Joe, you've been on them. Let's just be 100. You know, you get these folks who come and they're borderline. But they get the pass because they're the good old boy. Or they get the pass because we need more minorities. Or they get the pass because I know his cousin. Or that's my uncle. That's the bullshit that's in the hiring process. Right there. Black folks are not exempt from it any more than white folks are. Because I've seen just as many folks hired or considered because they're a minority as I have, well, this is my nephew, or his dad worked here, or his grandfather worked here. Who the hell cares?
So here's one point. Take me if I'm wrong. I want you to look at the leadership.
There you go. Amen.
Again, I go back to a very basic point. If you look at how the team is made up, look at the leader. I would like to know that if you go around the country and look at these so-called leaders, every one of them should be fired. There's anybody, you're Devlin, but then I'll give you that. Hey, thanks. I appreciate that. Believe it or not, I actually watch what you do, Chief, and without being a drum, you do a hell of a job. But that persona is not repetitive within the rank or the higher rank across the country. It's a problem. Let's shift off in the police department. It's the leadership. Tony talked about the leadership of the union. Notice the word, leadership. Everything boils down to a
You know, but Chief, let me ask you this real quick, Chief, and then in your response, if you'll get to it, because I'm curious to know this. And you don't have to, of course, you wouldn't be talking from your personal experience, but why are police administrations, and we all know, and I've said it on the show hundreds of times, and I'll say it again for those who are coming here and may not know, police departments are built of kingdoms. Every little division is its own thing. It doesn't like anybody else. So the whole blue family concept is bullshit. Every shift doesn't like the other shift. Even on the same shift, this work group doesn't like this work group, and for no other reason other than we're better. Why is it that police administrations are afraid of any officer? They don't have any rank. They have no power. They're just an officer who is effective in their community, who dialogues with their community, who gets along with their community. Why are police chiefs and the police administrators, the command staff, afraid of that officer?
Well, there's several reasons behind it. And again, I'll only go from, and I'm not going to dog any departments because I haven't worked for NYPD or Chicago or anything like that, but just the numbers. That's the first thing. You know, the incentive driven. How many things did we ride? How many risks did we make? Not did we make the community safer?
Exactly.
Or not did we solve the problem? But you have to take that mentality. You got to get rid of that. There may be some government folks on here and even law enforcement telling me that I don't know what I'm doing, but I do. So the other thing is that it's about openness and the concepts. A lot of this stuff, and thank you, Joe, for the props. And Stan, you always give me props too. But a lot of the things that I do, that I try to make my community better, not my ideas. Guess where they came from? That officer that you're just talking about, Stan, that no rank. Beat patrol officer that said, hey, what if we try to do something like this to get to our community? Civilian staff. I've had civilian staff, of course, I've had good civilian staff, particularly admins, myself, that were, and it's not an age deal, but they were about 20 years younger than me. It's hip and cool with all the social media stuff. I learned from them. Why did we do coffee for the cop? Why didn't that start 7 years, 8 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Because a civilian that had seen it at a department that was raving about how they put their coffee for the cop out there, and the citizens were commenting about how awesome it was. And even the officers. That's one little deal. So, those ideas come from those people. I think you got to get rid of the stats. You got to turn more towards problem-oriented type of things.
Mm-hmm.
What is the focus going to be? And it's got to be multifaceted. Now, look, I didn't always work where I'm at now. I worked in a community that had some problems. And we addressed issues. It wasn't Chicago, but we had people murdered. We had a lot of drugs. We had a lot of gangs. It was a well-rounded approach, like using code enforcement to fix things. Animal control. We used all these services help us try to fix these problems. And when I say fix problems, move the crack house out of your neighborhood. Yes, there was directed enforcement. Yes, we were stopping people. Yes, we were doing all kinds of things. But people that even though they're in a lower socioeconomic area of town, maybe retired and disabled, they still deserve to have a crack house next to them.
But Chief, so
you got to deal with these problems and look at it through a different lens. I think departments, some of the leadership, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a change. You're going to see a turn because some of the leaders that you have now in departments, not that I'm saying they're doing bad, but they're at that retirement stage. Someone's going to have to start filling in those ranks as they continue to move up. And you're seeing a lot of, at least in my area, you're seeing a lot of the dynamic, progressive chiefs being hired. Not 50, 60, 70-year-old chiefs. I'm talking about one recently, he's in the early 40s, one large department that Stan used to work for, very dynamic.
Chief Victorious. Hey!
But I'm thinking, so you're starting to see organization at least higher. I don't know about anywhere else in the world.
But Chief, let's do this. Let me interject this, because you brought up an interesting term, problem-oriented policing. And we educate the public here. And I think the public is so tired of listening to us as police with our ideas and our programs and our three-letter words for everything. The public does not understand problem-oriented policing when they hear community policing, which they are not the same thing, but here are the three elements that I think the community has been sold a kettle of fish on, and they bought into it. Number one is the crime prevention program. I'm not knocking McGruff the Crime Dog, so don't nobody call PETA and Toys R Us on me. I'm just saying, a crime prevention officer is one officer going out doing crime prevention. That is not a community policing unit. It absolutely is not. And some of your departments have sold that to you. Community policing is encompassing the entire department, the citizens, the janitor, the chief, all the way down. The officers on the street, the drug enforcement, the SWAT. Community policing is something that's got to be department-wide. Problem-oriented policing deals with a specific problem in a specific location to deal with the concerns of that specific person who brought it to the officer's attention, where community policing takes that specific problem and reinforces it so it does not affect the broader community and empowers the broader community to be part of that solution. So I will always go with community policing and 1,000%, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well,
You didn't mention me, did you? Okay, good, because you wouldn't have made it out alive, probably.
I used an example of the park. It was called for something about people urinating in the park or their bathrooms in the park. Yeah, bathrooms are expensive. But put that on somebody's radar. The police department's not building bathrooms, I can assure you. But somebody in your city is. Put that on the radar. Get it up to management and see if they can do that. So use that analogy in the context of train policing.
Amen.
Part of that is, as you said, is fixing sidewalks. It's looking at the root causes of
you need the cops because if someone breaks into my car, like we're going to need the police officers. Technically, yes. But technically, if you take a substantive approach to that, you look at the root causes of why there's all these car break-ins happening. It probably has to do with property. It probably has to do with certain other things. And you try to fix those things while you're also trying to improve police response to those situations.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be better off. The problem we have nowadays is that all the conversations that are happening are all an all-or-nothing conversation.
Right.
So everybody's talking about, oh, we need to get rid of the cops because they shouldn't be responding to situations. And it's like, that's true. We need to pull police out of situations that they should be responding to. But they don't want to be responding to them. They're not enjoying that aspect of their job because they know that there's nothing that they can do. So, but the thing is like, it's not completely get them out of the situation. It's have some kind of conversation about how we're going to improve the situation so the police don't get involved. You don't exclude them from that conversation because police have to be, if we're going to involve the justice system, the police and the actors of the justice system that we're trying to perform, they have to be involved in their own evolution. You can't just, you know, cure the headache by cutting off the head. Like, that's not how you're going to solve this situation. And there's so much conversation, it's like, oh, we just get the cops out of that situation. It's going to be fine. And it's like, well, that's not true. I hear so many people saying, oh, we need to get all of our money out of the cops. We need to put them into social services. Social services need the money. We need to replace that social safety net. But we have the money to improve both. We absolutely do. The Pentagon loses like $2 trillion every 5 years and no one says shit. We have the money. So we can improve both. But it's also the fact that if you are going to improve these social services, they need the same amount of monitoring, attention, and funding that the police department is improving. Because I don't know why we're talking about this. It's like, oh, let's just, you know, put the social workers on it. Like, have you paid attention to the social working system in this country? You got any social workers?
Yeah,
you think police, yeah, you think departments are broken? Yeah, are you kidding me? Like, and that's what they constantly tell me. It's all well and good. We do need to replace the social safety net. Police need to be involved in that evolution. And the main problem is apathy and neglect. Because it's like, okay, we're going to pull police out. We're going to fix these things from the social aspect. And that's all well and good, but what's the long game? Because everybody's just talking about quick changes and quick money, and it doesn't change in that way. You have to have a long game mentality about it. It needs to be involved in the evolution, and it needs to be a continual funding of ideas and money.
You know what, Izzy? You know, bro, and what you're saying, it brings back a lot of memories, because I remember getting calls that, you know, and our policy was, if you call, we're coming. You know, we weren't going to tell the citizen, no, it's not a police matter. We're going to come. There are officers who probably like or don't like this show that are going to hear this, and they're going to go, yeah, he's right there. We all get these calls. Well, when the radio, you answer it, you know, 310 or whatever, and they give you this call, and you see it pop up on your computer. And you're like, why in the hell am I going here? What do you want? And we're mentally searching this blue bag of magic tricks that the Academy has given us and the community has given us this leverage. And we ain't got nothing in there. And we're expecting to show up and work a miracle and fix everything. And it's something that the police have no business going to. And then when it goes sideways, not necessarily leading to a death or a shooting, but that citizen makes a complaint, the big question, why was he there? Do you think that these administrations sit up and go, well, our policy is no. They want to then come back to you and go, well, what did you do while you were there? Well, hell, you didn't give me nothing. You gave me no tools to deal with this crisis. Zero. There was no reason. Nobody was threatened. There was no violation of the law. Nobody was in fear of their life. But you sent me because they called. And they weren't happy. I saw a UFO, honest to God, call. I saw a UFO up in the sky. And I get there, and I'm going through the motions, and I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, you know. And I'm being polite and courteous and all that. But the officer acted like he didn't care. And they spent more time worried about that, how they were going to address me about that, than they were saying, our policy is screwed up. We need to refer that to NASA.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There are policy agencies that officers definitely don't need to go on.
Mm-hmm.
I can only come to speak for my agency, but sometimes people just want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you tell officers about the UFO call, yes, but what are we going to do about that? Nothing. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. But the way that I explain to officers, when they go, why are we going on that? Here's why we go. If somebody wants to be heard, number one. And number two, we're doing a change to your UFO call. You know, is this person just nuts, or did they see something? You know, and I get the part about their complaint on it. But, you know, from my perspective as the chief,
very important, because I would have thought of this, but one of the biggest pain in the asses for officers is 911. I'm not talking about 911 emergency. I'm talking about 911, my baby daddy got a girl that just pulled it on me, because they know it's Saturday night and we're busy, and your call, he yelled at you and left. Your call is at the bottom of the list. I want somebody here now. So they call 911. And it gets boosted up above everybody else's calls for service and response time. And so that happens. That officer is going there based upon the information that whatever caller gave to the dispatcher, which goes through 911 and comes to the officer. And then we want to judge the officer because of the actions he or she took. This didn't come in on the regular 7-digit number. It came in 911. And this is what he was told. And this goes back to the media. The media never reports what was told to the dispatcher, what was relayed to the officer, so that they can then understand why the officer did or did not do something they did or did not do at the scene. Now, we're just going to be honest here. People that hate police, that's fine. You may want to tune into another show. But I'm going to tell you, I've been through a lot of these calls. Luckily, I knew most of the people, but it's not that way for a lot of officers, nor should it be. But people call 911 just because I want to get boosted up to the front of the line. I need to get to the club, and I want an officer here now.
Again, my perspective and my community, if you call 911 and you lie about something taking place, we find out they got a gun, you're going to jail.
I wish other departments would do that, Chief.
You're going to jail.
Amen. Other local larger departments would actively pursue that policy, because number one, not only would it get these threats and these Kims or Kathys or Ks or whatever they're called, get them from stop reporting BS, but you know what, it would let the it sends a message to the officers that I'm going to go to this call, but there's going to be a repercussion if it ain't right. Amen.
Which videos it was, there's two or three of them out there where people call in on, you know, the black male is threatening me. I mean, they've got their video of them. There's not a threat. And I can't remember which video it was, but based on the conversation that person's having with the 911 operator and the video of the gentleman who's out on the cell phone, that woman would appear which have gone to jail.
UPS drivers.
You absolutely lied about what is going on. Mm-hmm. Now, we, and again, that information, that type of call, I'm trying not to use the
it's okay, Steve. Whoops up.
putting that information out, and again, I understand, and you may not even care, again, about law enforcement, but saying that and lying about that information sets us up for failure to begin.
Mm-hmm.
You're
absolutely
telling me that this gentleman has got to go. Okay, so look at it from this perspective. The officer shows up, we'll use the female, say the black male's over here threatening me, he's got a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Officer, how are we going to respond? We show up, guns are going to be out because that guy's got a gun. It's going to be on video of us taking this guy that doesn't have a gun down a gun. It creates an issue. And I tell you what, if you're going to go to that length with us as law enforcement, you're going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to be the one on the news having to
observe. Damn right.
Why we lost somebody at gunpoint that didn't have a gun.
Damn right.
You're going to get the call. You're going to hear where this person had this information. Just as failure. So there are people out there. I'm telling you, there's videos that people have gotten super pissed off about because the person that called in gave a petition, they had false information to law enforcement, and they responded in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, two other officers on here. If you go to a man with a gun call, Joe Mosley, how are you going to that call? When you exit that vehicle and you encounter that person, what's your tactics? What were you trained in? You're gonna have your gun. You have your notebook in your hand. No, we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a hard fact. Joe Mosley went to Chicago, went to the police captain Chicago PD. I went to a community college law enforcement academy 26 years ago, but it's the same thing. Oh, I'm telling you, you should go to jail.
You know, you write a check, somebody's going to cash it. It's that simple.
I'm passionate about that because that happened to me.
Amen.
When I first got here in the community, and again, I'm not going to get into this work, but this was another public servant in the emergency services world. They called in because he had gotten, he called in, gave information, said there was a gun on scene. And I left the PD with my crew, the whole shift went, and we showed up. Lights and siren was a priority call. They were on another call. Come to find out that information wasn't correct. They're like, well, you know, he works for this particular ambulance company. And I had a few choice words. I had some empty words, and I said, I don't give a.
You know,
if he lied to us, he's going to put him in jail.
Mm-hmm.
That was like 2 weeks here. And they looked at me like, we can do that? I said, yeah, we can. We have not many people to be in danger going to this call.
Mm-hmm.
No, that doesn't work this way. You're not going to get us here fast. So I'll shut up. That's amazing.
Brother, I love you. Thank you. That's gospel. Come on, Joe, because I see you biting.
And listen, the problem here is our officers could make their arrests, but their leaders will tell them to
mm-hmm. Here we go.
I mean, so for us, now that I'm back at work again, I've had those calls again. Let me see, I got some cops. Then you get there because, I just want to make sure that you all come quick. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And they say, oh, look at these overzealous policemen. Wait a minute, she called. And then he had a gun, he was threatening her.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the situation. Nothing.
So, but let me ask Joe. Let me ask you and the chief this though, because
when you go to search him, now you're doing an illegal search because he doesn't have a.
Yeah, but I want to ask both of y'all this because I want to get y'all's input on this because I think it's relevant. Because I know I was sick and tired of this. I was very blessed that I knew 80% of the people I was going to or going to deal with, I knew them. So I had an idea. I'm not saying they didn't have a gun, but I had an idea of what they would or wouldn't do. But what do we do when you have these officers who are set up for failure? Because we live in a particular area or time where everybody wants to hit the blue lotto. We did a show last year called Blue Lotto. Everybody's looking at Blue Lotto. And so, and this doesn't fall to the officers. This falls mostly on the command staff. It's got to have the balls to tell the city manager, I know you love revenue. Tickets make money for the city. But we ain't going to this kind of stuff. But we're, like Chief Devlin, we're going to start putting these people in jail. Now, it's easy to put them in jail when they're the Walmart worker. The questions don't really start flying around until they work in City Hall or until they work here over at this place. See, when the and I know, Chief, for you, because we know you, but would you agree that even with the staff that you've adapted, that sometimes some communities get a quicker response and the benefit of the doubt? I was scared and in fear of my life than others.
Yes, you're right. I mean, that's commonplace. I mean, I know that you don't speak about it. I'm positive you can speak about it because I'm sure he's done something on that. But there's a difference in response. It is just the tone he's been from administrations that the response can be the same wherever we go.
Texas, I was coming out of the military. I didn't have any money. I wasn't rich. And I lived in 1911 North 6th Street. I lived in the hood. There were gunshots all the time. My daughter grew up not understanding what birds sounded like. And I used to watch my daughter where we would hear the gunshots at Parkside. And she wouldn't even flinch. It's like she didn't even hear them anymore. And so in a community like that, to me, when I went out, because this was ironically the same community that supported me when I would come back from the academy and people, I'd stop in the store, have a school. You know, you're going to do good, hang in there, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I understood at the end of those, because when I came out, I worked right there. I understood at the end of those gunshots, there was a kid I knew, whether he was a drug dealer, and we could throw people under the bus. We could put our Christianity on the shelf and judge these people and throw them under the bus. That's fine, whether they're a drug dealer or whatever. But I knew this kid, Reverend Frank Montgomery. And I'm going to insert this, and I'll be quiet the rest of the show. Reverend Frank Montgomery. This man stood with me when I started speaking out about police reform in the 90s and saying all these people are throwaways. Some of them are worth saving. Some of them are worth going extra mile. And he just celebrated an anniversary at Marshall Chapel Church in Waco. But this man walked with me in these projects. Parkside Village, anybody on this timeline from Waco will tell you, the worst projects in Waco, Texas in the 90s, outside of Pecan Gardens, which had started to fade off. When we were shootings and rapes and aggravated assaults like you would work a burglar motor vehicle. It was every day, all day. And this man had the guts to stand with me, and he told me, I'm young hero officer. I'm making arrests. The public trust me. I'm learning information. I'm doing all this stuff. And he says, Stan, we can't throw all these people away. All of them are not bad people. They made bad choices. And I'm not saying go up there unprepared and be unforgiving. But what I am saying, at the end of the day, as police officers, we deal with human beings. We're not dealing with whatever the media has shown us is a psycho mentality of this individual. We're not dealing with Dylan Roots. We're not dealing with, it's a difference between a school shooter and these people out here on the street every day just trying to make a living. And I'm not talking about lawbreakers. I'm talking about people you come in contact with, victims. And I think we as a profession have lost our compassion, our ability to empathize and understand people at their quintessential core base of where they are. And I think people today are starving to be listened to say, I don't have anything, and I don't know where to go. And the sad part is, the officers on the street don't have anything either. And guess what? They don't know where to go because their chief's head is so far up the ass of the assistant city manager, the mayor, the special interest people that he or she is out of touch with what that man and woman on the street is dealing with every single day. Now, folks can get their feelings hurt. If you're in the city position anywhere in America, your feelings are hurt. 646-716-4621. Press 1 and come on. Because you know what? We're having real talk here today. It says open lines. Come on, Chief.
What you're talking about is, I'm going to be quick and brief, but you know, again, finding those root causes of problems, people trying to make it, I got no food.
Absolutely.
Because of this. And that's where you see, well, we see, people on this panel, and you know, I try to promote it as much as I can, that office that puts out his own wallet and pays for
blood. Amen.
For my Christmas gifts. And just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not happening. I know that's happening. It's made that it's happening. We both have been on phone conversations where we've talked about the things, we've done in order just to help somebody solve a problem and keep it from reoccurring. That issues are that there are some instances, mental health, and I'm going to belabor that issue. Not a whole lot of resources available across the country for mental health, period. So you don't fix the problem because it's a reoccurring issue. So, and there's tons of stuff to deal with that. You know, whether you're not adults, not taking medication, you can't force people to do certain things, all that kind of
thing.
So we need to have that conversation there. But what you're talking about is saying that real policing, that issue.
Absolutely.
Look, and I have to go back, you know, Stan Mason, he loved that. Stan Mason helped his community. But he also put bad people in jail. He also faced danger. He also had some really bad folks. And as you said, they're not all going to be thrown away. And I tell this to officers all the time. If you save one person, right, you have one conversation or one interaction with somebody and you change their life, and they come back and tell you, it's all worth it. I know you don't remember 5 years ago, you had me end up on the side of the road, and man, you jumped me, and you yelled and screamed at me and said, yeah, you know better, you know, difference right and wrong, and changing lives. And you did. I'm not married, and I got kids and all that. I mean, there's stories like that. Stan's out a bunch of them. I've got a bunch of them. Joe's, I guarantee he's got a ton of them. I think Joe's got people here. Change a lot. So if you get to that point, you're doing right. You know, and the media, I agree 100% with you, Steve, Matt. I wanted to bring this up, you know, today, or not today, Tuesday, getting gas, you know, for my squad car going out to the police academy. You know, I had two people. As I was pumping out, I wasn't in uniform. I was in my plane, sure, I didn't see chief on it, but, you know, I looked like a cop. thank you for your service. I appreciate what you do for our community. They knew who I was. I didn't have any real police stuff on me. But when people tell you that, I'm not talking. I had my, you know, country club. These weren't country club people that said this to me. They were just people getting gas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you're getting that stuff, then you're doing what you're supposed to do. So I don't believe this is the rhetoric. We got bad people. It's our job to get rid of them and prosecute them when they do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I think people need to understand that there are many, many good officers out there that are really trying very, very hard to make the communities better.
Let me
say, one thing I will say about that, I mean, what
and I say that all the time, and that's one of the arguments for those substantive changes, because if you put the money into these areas that have problems, if we come up with different solutions other than just sending the police all the time, it makes the jobs of officers like the chief, like Joe, makes it easier to do that, to experience that and provide that type of change. If we get them out of these situations they don't need to be responding to. And on that note, again, like we say, we got to get back to this culture of policing and this culture of justice that we're only now seeing it start to reconsider. That is a culture that is vindictive, that is violent, that is punitive, that is very aggressive. I mean, like all you guys said, like, if you get a call for a gun response, you're going to come in hot. And while that's merited because somebody said they had a gun, we've got to start to rethink. I mean, in my opinion, that culture around that, because I've had a ghost story about this. There's a cop I know in Ireland who's basically part of their, he's out of Belfast, he's kind of part of this, well, their equivalent of SWAT team. And he'll tell me all the time, I'll talk to him all the time, he'll tell me, he'll watch these videos of these shootings, justified or not, and he sees these officers, and he says, I don't understand why you guys do what you do, y'all are crazy. Like, even if you're responding to a situation, I don't understand why you get out of the car running.
Run up there.
Fully exposed, broad-shouldered Rambo style. He's always saying, like, I don't understand why you guys do that. You don't maintain cover. You don't keep something in between you and the suspect. You just jump out like Jean-Claude Van Damme. And he's like, what the heck do you think is going to happen in that situation? And that is true. And, like, there are differences between countries and everything like that. But, like, when a person from a tactical team in Belfast, who worked during the troubles, by the way, like, we want to talk about how bad it could get. Go look at what happened in Ireland during the troubles. We still don't live in a country where our towns have walls around them and bomb detectors, and our cops aren't doing their jobs with military units for protection. That's what he was doing. But when they say that, and he says that all the time, he's like, I don't understand why you officers, good or bad shoot, just run in there like it's an action movie. And that's something to consider about the culture of policing and the culture of justice in this country. Why is it so punitive? Why is it so aggressive?
Money.
Okay.
No, let me inject something real quick. Izzy, I want you to answer this first, and then, you know, we can go Joe and the chief, and, you know, Dr. Face asked a very important question that really hits at my core. She said, I'd like to know the justification for how they walk up on a person like Dylan Root, or I will insert, this is Stan inserting this into her question, who was that clown that they let go to kill all the people with the, that they're looking for, oh, what's his name, in the protest? They shot the protesters and walked past the police and went home.
Kyle Rittenhouse.
So we'll add Kyle Rittenhouse in there. But can kill a man like Philando Castile, who was licensed to care. How does this happen? And I have my belief. Thank you, Joe. I have Stan's belief is we saw January 6th. Policing has been conditioned to not see white folks as carrying their Second Amendment as a threat. That's Stan's belief. But anyway, it's open.
What's the question?
Okay, she'd like to know the justification for how they let someone walk up, you know, how the police can walk up on a person like Dylan Rook or Kyle Rittenhouse, take them alive, but yet they kill someone like Philando Castile, who's in his car, licensed to carry.
Well, I don't know what the justification that they would say is, but it's probably, I mean, anything that's bad, that would be bullshit. I'm going to call it racism. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, policing, the foundation of policing in this country is based in slave trade. It's based in the practice subjugation of people based on the color of their skin. You don't get rid of that. Like, the civil rights movement was not that long ago. Like, you don't just get rid of that. Like, listen, let's talk about the civil rights movement. We were talking about 911. Don't look up why 911 was created. It was not created to help people. It was created in direct response to the civil rights riots that were happening. And they needed a major number to call and get people in there. It's racism. It's implanted, it's embedded, it's cultural, and they don't want to have a conversation about it because it's too tough to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And look at this. Andy, finish your point. I was going to say
it's easier to just put band-aids over bullet holes than actually figure out why people were getting shot. Like,
amen.
Like, you're just going to... talk about all this stuff. We're not going to talk about the inherent racism that has guided the history and the laws of this country and still does. Until we have that conversation, we're not going to fix anything.
And we're not going to have those conversations. I want this to be made clear because, again, I'm thinking from Tony, first book of Tony, third verse, as a pastor. I don't feel helpless, okay? You know, as long as I've got King Jesus, I know I'm going to make it. So, you know, I'm just not happy with what is going on in society at large. And the reason why I agree with Izzy and why I am not helpless, but I'm also going to just be not even an alarmist, but a realist. This country is not going to change. You're not going to get rid of bigotry. You're not going to get rid of the caste system that is out here. And why is that, Tony? Why do you believe that, Tony? Hate, misinformation, police misconduct has made millionaires out of people. I mean, do you really think that these people, and these groups, I'm saying to you, do you think some people really want change in this country? Do you think they want black and white to really sit down and say, what can I do? White supremacy groups are making millions of dollars by people joining and giving them money. And forget about white supremacy groups, the media groups who are raising the cost of airtime for people to advertise during a certain time of the day because they know, like Joe said, if it bleeds, it leaks. Watch your news and watch the advertisers that come on at the beginning of the news when it bleeds, it leaks. They're paying more, like Super Bowl airtime. So they don't, so these big media groups, they don't want change. I mean, if you look at the Democratic and the GOP, they're pulling in record numbers of money. And they're all looking, and they're, why are they pulling in money? Because people from both sides are looking for their party to fix the problems. And you know what? If I'm a Democrat leader or a GOP leader, that is, I'm going to say it, a damn good gig, because I'm going to create a problem and then allow you to pay me to fix it through fundraising. I have no problem with Black Lives Matter. We've made millionaires out of the three ladies who started Black Lives Matter. It's the entire group. Now, am I unhappy with that? Hey, I don't care. Hey, make that money. But do you think those three ladies who are, you know, and yeah, one of them is all that hype about buying homes, do you think they really want this country to make them, you know, not have so much money? Did you ever hear about Benjamin Crump before Trayvon Martin? I have no problem with Benjamin Crump. But, I mean, if anybody is happy about police misconduct and how these young black men are getting, I mean, I don't see Ben Crump going to the defense and the aid of any Pacific Islander or Asian people who are being beat up and being stabbed. So if anybody is happy with the change of events, and it's just my opinion, agree or disagree, it's okay. But I'm just saying, I don't believe, I don't know their hearts. I'm just saying, I don't think these people want to see change. You know, because again, police is not the issue. I look at Jim Devlin. He's not the issue. Just like if Jim wanted to say, hey, you know, I'm going to do better, but black people just don't vote, then I would get offended at that because I vote. Thank God John votes. So I can't see it as a policing issue. There is a police accountability issue. And I know we got the 17-minute mark, but I want to ask this question, and I'm going to be quiet and not even do an exit. I talked to Stan about a topic, and if any of you want to just say, hey, I'm not touching that, I'm fine with that.
Hey, do this, Tony. Let me grab this caller, and then I'm coming right back to you for that topic, because we're going to put that topic in here because it's important. I don't care if we end on that topic, but we're going to put it in, but I'm going to get to this caller. But I definitely want you to introduce that topic because it needs to be talked about. 314 area code 4953. Good morning.
Yeah, is it me, Stan?
Yeah, that's you. What's up?
How you doing? You know, before there was a Benjamin Crump, there was an Alton Maddox in New York. He used to work with Al Sharpton until he lost his license. And Black Lives Matter doesn't represent me and my family. I'm a natural-born black American citizen, and they don't represent me. And the news media is a culprit. When they report white police officer shoots kills black men. White police officer this, white supremacy that. That's the news again. Inflaming the conversation. And you know, as far as Kyle Rittenhouse wasn't doing anything wrong. He came under attack. And he'd done a good job of defending himself. And here's the case right here. You had a black man that had on some white pants that came up to Kyle while he was laying on his back and tried to stump him. He turned around and ran. Kyle did not shoot him in the back.
You know, hold on, because I'd have stumped his ass, too. He just shot two people who were unarmed.
Well, here's the thing, Stan. If you just got through talking. I'm a U.S. citizen, and I've seen different. And I would have stood with him and would have done the same thing. Somebody hit him in the back of the head. Another man come up and tried to stop killing. Another man tried to stump him, turned around and ran. If he wasn't under control, he would have shot the man that ran in the back, but he did not. I'll listen to your response.
Hold on.
Come on, Ed.
Let's set aside the fact that we're talking about a 17-year-old kid walking around the street with an unlicensed semi-automatic firearm in another state where he wasn't licensed in any state to have it. So setting aside that, already illegal action, but he was pointing his gun at people. And standing outside of businesses with other militant members, pointing his weapon at people, and he got his ass kicked because he shot a couple people. He blew the one guy away. The film shows.
Joe, let me just answer.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I mean, everything's allowed to be suspected or everything like that, but is the caller actually, are you saying that if that kid was black, that situation would have gone the way it did?
He's gone, isn't he? Dropped before I played the clip. I try to be neutral on the Zoom. I don't want people to look. I don't want to look disinterested. And I don't know. And I'm not disrespecting the caller, but I was like, WTF, you know. But let me, because we're at the 11-minute mark. Tony, hit in what you wanted to hit in, brother. Because I promised you we go get that in, and then we'll go around because that. Okay. Come on, Tom.
Okay. And again, I'll preface this by saying I don't condone violence, and I strongly oppose anybody raising their hands to women, children, and officers. Anybody. I hate violence, and I don't condone. This is the question after watching countless videos that I posed to Stan a couple of days ago. When can the general public start defending themselves against an officer who is crossing the line and may end your life if you do not act? This is what we continue to see. And think about that for a moment. I'm not saying to start resisting arrest. I'm talking about the pregnant woman who gets punched in the face and the husband has told this person over and over again she's pregnant. And all of us can admit there are men and women, thugs, who should not be wearing a uniform, and they cross the line. We don't, just like this caller who said, hey, this guy, Kyle Rittenhouse, was on the ground, and he was getting beat up, but he wanted to defend himself. Okay, here you have a video. Here you have a video of somebody who was in handcuffs, getting the crap beaten out of them by an officer, and we don't allow that citizen to defend themselves. I am wondering, and I don't want this to happen. This is why Stan wanted me to pose this question. I don't want John and Joan Q. Public to start saying, you know what, I've had enough. This officer has crossed the line. I'm going to go in my house, and I'm going to get a gun, and I'm going to shoot this person. Sit on their dead body. When they come arrest me, I'll do jail time, and I'll County because that person is dead. I don't want this to happen. And I know that if it were to happen in society, if they see it once, then you have this wave. I don't condone citizens beating up police, but I also don't believe in police who we should expect more from to lose it. And we thought body cam was going to be the answer. But we find out, no, because the grand jury came back and said that they're not guilty. So in all these cases, you know, we haven't had people that really believe what they saw on camera. So do you think that there is a time when citizens have a right to defend themselves if this police officer is out of control and losing it and may end the life? What if somebody had a shove Chauvin off of George Floyd 3 seconds before he died? What would have happened? Would he have still been alive? Exactly. Even though the person that shoved him is trying to preserve George Floyd's life, they would have been shot. You see where I'm going with this?
Wait, are you asking, is the question, when does the person have a right to defend themselves against the police?
When do we? I mean, come on, Izzy, if I came up to you and punched you in your face, if I held you and I thought you broke into my car, but let me just do maybe an Officer Abel scenario. Okay, Officer Abel got drunk. Officer Abel, off duty, got drunk, saw this man, chased him down the street. The man got in his car. Abel got in his car, took off. They got out of the car. Abel shot this man in the hand because he thought this man, you know, threw something at him. Turns out Abel was following the wrong person. What happened? Abel did not get in trouble. Why? Because the court said he is still on duty and had a right to do what he was doing, even though he was drunk. But if I did that to you, and I'm drunk and I chase you, and you try to defend yourself, you have that right. Stand your ground. But we don't have that with the police. I can't stand my ground with the police. And you know why that's not a thing? Because we've expected professionalism and courtesy and safety from police. But now we have, hey, that's just what happened. He was having a bad day. But this air traffic controller, you know, hell, he only crashes planes twice a month, but he could have a job. No, that doesn't matter. Dozens of citations and things in his record for misconduct, but he's still on the job. But we as the public, you can handcuff me, and then you can still punch me in the face and have a job, but I can't defend myself. The question is, Izzy, when should that happen? Should that even happen? Why does it happen?
Yeah, but we're at the 6 minute mark, so we got to be about 1 minute response.
It's just a question.
Yeah,
I'm not advocating. I'm just asking a question.
Okay, 1 minute response. Joe?
1 minute response. First off, why are you defending yourself against use of force in every state process? Who's going to enforce it? And let's talk about Sheldon. If you look at their policies, they had policies in place where they could have stopped what Sheldon did. They chose not to. So the fact that they didn't do it didn't mean they couldn't do it. No, it's there. Now, if you choose not to do it, that's on you. But to say that they don't have it is not true, totally not true.
I pose this as I call it the officer's 50% rule. We're talking about Chauvin. Agree with Chauvin. There was policy in place that allowed those officers to get involved. Right? They chose not to do it. But in the context of a good officer, no use of force is pretty. When we go hand-to-hand, it's not pretty. So some of it is objective. So when you're standing there and you don't think you like what I'm doing, you got to be very mindful and be very careful and step into that situation. Even though I'm legally 100% justified to do that. Because if I'm in the right, and you come and I'm actively putting this person into custody because I have a legal right to do it, and I'm doing it in the correct way, and you come and get my scene, I know that's not what you're talking about, but I always know something. The officers always usually know something that you don't know because you're standing on the sidewalk.
Amen.
If I have information that you don't have.
Okay, let me just...
So just be very careful because that is legal violation, and we are going to use... You have the potential to have force used against you.
Okay, now, real quick, Chief, 20 more seconds.
I'm sure that there are going to be laws that will be put into place, but I'm not necessarily sure that they're going to be good and proactive, specifically because they're not talking about this bill.
Okay, I'll inject this part for my 1 minute. I'll say, if we look at Carol Horn and what happened to her in Buffalo, good officers are not going to step in, because when you're a good officer that steps in, you get fired and your pension gets taken from you. And you got to fight for years and years and years to get your pension back, because you got a badass officer that you never prosecuted, by the way, that does it. Now, I can't view all this lens of the show and what we do from a white perspective. It's nothing against white people. I've been black my whole life. I have to deal with my view, my experiences, my life experience, what I see and what I challenge every day. And I will say this. The defense and the George Floyd prosecution brought up that nobody physically intervened. That's bullshit, because we know as black people, Facebook full of them right now, if black people step off the curb, you're going to A, be arrested for interfering, B, be arrested for assault on a police officer, or C, be shot. And it's going to be upheld. It's going to be upheld. We've seen it too many times. So if I'm going to lose my life, lose my livelihood, lose my job, or sit in jail and lose my job, and that's the reality of it. And we're going back to the George Floyd Act, where I said I wanted certain things included in the George Floyd Act that weren't included in, because I think it was written to appease black people and not actually solve the problem facing America. Not black people, but America. And whether it's whistleblower protection, whether it's suicide prevention, whether it was intervention by citizens on behalf of another, these things were not put in there. And I think it was rushed, and it was put out, and everybody's applauding it. It's great. George Floyd's name's on it. And I don't think it's done enough. That's just me. Now, we're down to 2 minutes. Blog Talk's going to – you'll hear the countdown. I'll turn it down. But we're going to keep this going, because I want to go another 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And I want something personal. And this is me right now. And, I mean, these people that are co-hosts on this show, they're not here just because they're a preacher or in Chicago or a chief. I don't give a crap about that. Y'all, people that know me, you know me. They bring stuff. You know, so I want them to take 1 minute each and talk about what this show, and we go 2 minutes, whatever. But what does this show mean to you? And I want to, because we got first-time listeners that are going to listen to these shows. Every week we do a show, it's another week for us, but it's somebody's first day of school. And you don't have to sell the show. We don't have marketers. You guys all know that. But what does it mean to you? Because this show started in Waco, Texas, as a Facebook Live. I will forever always give my props back to the people in Waco, black and white, and some rich, some poor. But these people believed in me. And in the end, when I left Waco, they believed in me when the people I worked with and for 25 years didn't believe in me. And last week, the President of the United States stood up and talked about police reform, for better or for worse. Parroted what some of you have said for 4 years. So if you guys would, and we'll start out, Chief, we'll start with you. Just what does this show mean to you?
You know, as one of the newest people, and the one that obviously doesn't look like a whole lot of people here, I didn't know you're black in my life. That's new. I think it's important to get the information out from the perspective of all sides. That's why I find it so interesting. As we have said, you have said hundreds of times, this is real talk. I mean, this is the real nuts of this issue. You have a ton of experience. I mean, between Joe and I, you know, what are we, over about 60 years between the two of us? Right? So you're talking about 60 years of law enforcement, one from a major metropolitan area, one from a mid-sized to small. in Texas. And it stands, you did. We talk, we speak the same language. We talk about the same things. You know, John, when John's on here, you know, his perspective is important. Hey, John and I, we should be polar opposites of one another. We should not technically, in theory, get along.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that, as Tony has said a couple of weeks ago, there are forces out there that are attempting to divide us. Mm-hmm. There's stuff out there that is attempting to keep us separated. And I think part of that is what we talked about today. I think if we can get together and find a common ground, I mean, not everything's going to make me happy, not everything's going to make you happy, but we're going to have that large conversation to find that middle piece to fix this problem. And it's going to take all of us to fix the problem. It's not some person in D.C. that has no idea what it's like to work in a community along the border of Texas with border of Texas and Mexico with four police officers.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't understand what the problems are there, we're trying to paint this with a broad brush. We talked about community policing, problem-oriented policing today. Those are individualistic ideas and programs for each city. What I do in my community may not work in Chicago. What Chicago PD does, I may be able to take it and pieces of it put together. But this broad brush, and this is how we can fix it, is not the answer. It's not going to work, and it's not realistic. So that's what the show is to me. This is what it brings me. I get to spout my opinion on law enforcement. I get to talk about some of the great things that I think I see that other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a different perspective from individuals who are not in this profession. And again, that's part of that learning. That's what this is about. So, you know, I'm honored to be part of it. Joe's gonna get paid. We just gotta keep that dress up. You know, I mean, I got a T-shirt on. What do you?
Nah, but Chief, you brought up.
You wear the same one every week.
Chief, you brought up a good point real quick. Not, I'm going to let you finish, but people wonder why I don't have sponsors, why I don't have a GoFundMe, why I don't have a tithes and offering. I don't, the federal government, I know the government watches this show on a real tip. They watch it, and you ain't going to come and stand where you got $5.50 that you didn't report taxes. You're not coming at me. I don't need nobody's money. We're making it work. Amen. Say that part again.
We can say what we really want to do. It's really on our heart.
That's right.
It's really in our minds. And you know, and again, you can not like me or my profession or the people that do this job, and that's cool. I get it. But it's to me for personal missions for me to get you to change your mind.
Now you promised me something, Chief. But you promised me something, that you would do something for me, somebody that I wanted to say thank you to. You remember that part? Go ahead. Okay. All right. Izzy, come on, bro. What does this show mean to you, man?
I mean, for me, being, you know, doing what I do, I just like talking to experts and people who know what they're talking about. Experts, professionals, people with skin in the game. I appreciate the need for advocacy and for advocates, but I prefer information over passion.
Amen.
So for me, it's a great source to talk to experts and be part of the conversation where I can learn. And actually gain resources to, you know, write about the stories that I want to write about and write about them in the complex and detailed way that I do. Because it's a microcosm of the type of conversation that needs to be happening around the country, which is, you know, tough conversations,